This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
To the near side here, Wheeler down low for Connor. Out in front of shot, he scores! Little behind the back pass to himself. Get up, get down with the quickness, and we are tied at one. Kyle Connor's team leading 29. It's a power play goal. Burns got it back again, put another shot toward the net. Bouncy puck, rebound, they score! Two quick goals here for San Jose. Timo Meier, the last touch. And the horn sounds to end the hockey game. And San Jose is going to win tonight. 3-2 over the Winnipeg Jets. It was an interesting contest, to say the least.
It was a nice goal by Kyle Connor. That's certainly the case. Beautiful goal. Probably the nicest of his goals so far this season. Alas, for the Winnipeg Jets and their fans, that was where the beauty began and where the beauty ended. And it was not a beautiful result on the scoreboard, the Jets dropping a 3-2 defeat to the woeful San Jose Sharks last night at Bell MTS Place. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio, as always. And that's one of us is on vacation, of course, by my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg. Ezzy, good to see you on this Saturday morning.
You know what? I would not mind being on vacation right now, the way the weather has been. You know, what was it, minus 47 the other day? But
the wind,
you know,
was pretty
I was lucky
brutal
to have a vacation recently. So, yeah, I mean, Dave M is under the weather, unfortunately not able to join us today. So, you know, we're going to go on without him.
We'll go keep on trucking without Dave M.
Keep on trucking,
wish
man.
Wish him well as he recuperates from whatever illness is currently plaguing him.
Well, it seems like the entire city is sick right now.
It's flu season. I mean, it makes sense that it would be flu season. We know the flu bug is coursing through the Winnipeg Jets dressing room as well. But that's no excuse for last night's defeat at the hands of the San Jose Sharks. And you know, Ezzy, the Jets started this crucial six-game homestand. They started it off very well. They had won three games in a row. They took care of business against the Ottawa Senators last Saturday. Then on Sunday, they had that great comeback against the Chicago Blackhawks, a divisional game. And you think, okay, three in a row. Maybe they're going to start rolling. Things are looking good for this team. Tuesday night against the New York Rangers, no contest. The Rangers were the better of the two teams there. And then last night against the San Jose Sharks. Don't let the scoreboard fool you, folks. If you didn't watch that game and you're just looking at the box score and you see that the Sharks win by a goal, and that it's a close game, and it seems to be, and the Jets, you know, rack up a lot of shots on goal and everything else. Don't let last night fool you, folks. The Winnipeg Jets, in the vast majority of the game, being played at even strength, being played at 5-on-5, you know, over 50 minutes of the game, racked up a grand total of 13 shots on goal. I'm going to say that one more time. Vast majority of the game, played at even strength, played at 5-on-5 against the San Jose Sharks team that you have to look way at the bottom of the Western Conference to find the San Jose Sharks team. They're not playing for anything. They're not making a run to the playoffs. They're just, you know, playing out the string of the season.
Well, and also you don't have arguably your best player in Logan Couture.
And Thomas Hertl.
And Thomas Hertl, who's arguably your second best player.
Yeah, it's a weak San Jose Sharks.
So your top two forwards.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe, you know, you throw Timo Meier in there as far as being one of your top forwards.
Doesn't matter. You're a shorthanded San Jose Sharks.
Two of their top three forwards are out of the lineup. So to me, absolutely, there's no excuse for the way the Jets played in that first period. Now, in the second period, there was definitely a pushback. And you saw those two goals, you know, with roughly 90 seconds apart.
Yeah, one of them on the power play with Evander Kane sitting in the penalty box for his hit on Neil Pionk, which just coming out from NHL Department of Player Safety, breaking news about 5 minutes ago. Evander Kane will have a hearing today.
He should.
Over the elbow to the head of Neil Pionk.
That was a dirty hit.
Yes, it was a dirty hit. It would expect that with that hearing, it likely means that Evander Kane will get a suspension, probably a game, maybe two games.
I wouldn't expect it to be that long, Drew. Like, yeah, one, two games.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't even thinking that there would be a hearing, to be honest with you. But he was certainly penalized on the play, and the Jets took advantage. And, you know, aside from, you know, the couple goals that Connor and Wheeler score there, and I didn't think they followed up on that at all, by the way.
If you remember, stopped skating.
Stefan Nosen had a penalty after the Kane penalty. And if you remember, Marcus Sorensen had that breakaway.
The Jets gave up two shorthanded breakaways when they had an opportunity on the power play to extend the lead to 3-1. Instead, to your point, Ezzy, what you were just saying, they stopped skating. And they didn't, and they stopped skating up until basically the last 2 minutes of the game, where they pulled the goalie, where they went 6-on-5, and they, sure, they had a litany of chances, and 9 times out of 10, Kyle Connor scores there into the empty net. Probably 99 times out of 100, Kyle Connor scores there into the empty net.
Yeah, but you're talking about the end of the game there. Like, when you're talking about the full third, the full three periods,
yes,
and the lack of 5-on-5 offense. Like, yes, I agree, Drew. Kyle Connor hits that post. I don't know if Brent Burns got a piece of it, or, you know, the puck was, doesn't matter. I mean, there's not that much time left on the clock at that point. It's the way the Jets came out. And, you know, you mentioned the Chicago game. Obviously, the Jets won that game. They had a horrible start as well.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, this hasn't been the team that we've been used to the last 2-3 weeks coming out of the All-Star break, right? Like, this team has got out to leads, and, you know, that lead to me, pardon me, that lead by the Sharks is very troubling to me, because the Jets had 3 shots on net in the first period, and it wasn't like they were, the Sharks were completely dominating the pace of play. The Jets just weren't generating enough offense. And sure, yeah, they missed some nets and they got a lot of chances on the power play, but overall, this is not the type of effort that you wanted against a team, as you mentioned, second last, third last in the Western Conference. They needed to win this. They needed to get the 2 points, because you have so many teams that are clustered together, like Chicago, like Minnesota, like Nashville. I mean, the Jets don't. Nashville has 3 games in hand on the Jets.
Look, Arizona is the team the Jets are directly behind in the standings. And Arizona on Thursday night lost in Ottawa. Opportunity knocks for the Winnipeg Jets. They have a couple games in hand on the Coyotes. One of them is last night. You're playing the San Jose Sharks on a Friday night at home, and you can only muster 13 even strength shots on goal.
No, it's not acceptable, Drew. And, you know, if you want to get into the goal that was scored, you know, in the first period, I mean, Marcus Sorensen,
yeah,
I mean,
that
should have been goalie interference. And I realize the explanation from the NHL. I understand that. I don't agree with it. But that goal, I think, I mean, that turns out to be a key goal.
Fine. It does turn out to be a key goal, but, you know, and it's a bad call, and you're upset, and you're unhappy with the decision.
I understand.
Where's the pushback at that point in time, though? No,
but first of all, I understand why maybe it was called a goal on the ice, but after a video review, I don't understand how that wasn't overturned.
Absolutely. There's no question. And that is the spin the wheel and you get an answer from the NHL, you know, review. Who knows? I mean, you know, it's always a giant question mark as to what's going to happen. And sure, you may be, it's a bad call. And sure, you maybe got a little bit screwed on it. But you know what it also should be? It should be a bit of a wake-up call. And it should be, hey, we've played like junk to start this game. This is a bad call. I'm going to get the fire in my belly, and I'm going to push back now. And they didn't. They pushed back when Kane hit Pionk, and they got the power play goal. And it was a beautiful goal by Kyle Connor. And then they get the 2-1 goal. And then what did they do? They rested on their laurels. Oh, we're up 2-1. We don't need to skate anymore. We came back. We can score on the whim. We're fine. Guess what? You weren't fine. And sure, the puck luck and the bouncing puck went to the Sharks' advantage last night. But if the Jets had played and skated for the majority of that game, they come out victorious.
Well, now the Jets are forced to win these next 2 games, because we talked about this last week. I mean, we expected the Jets to go 5-1, 4-2, something like that, right?
Even
like,
4-2 was, I thought, going to be probably a week given the competition that was coming into town.
And that's just it, right? Like, yeah. you aren't facing any top teams in the league. You're not facing a Washington, who, by the way, they face at the end of the month.
Twice, back-to-back.
Right? You're not facing Tampa Bay, Boston, St. Louis. Like, you've
facing
already
non-playoff teams who exactly are playing out the string.
Exactly. So I agree with you. Anything worse than 4-2 is unacceptable, because, as we talked about, if you crunch the numbers, right, it's probably going to take 91, 92 points to get into the playoffs this year. So if you're able to go 5-1 or 4-2, you can go 500 for the rest of the season, right? But if you go 3-3, then you're going to have to go. That just means
you have to find the wins elsewhere when your schedule gets hard.
It's just points that you're leaving on the board. And I realize that Arizona is a mess right now, and they're talking about, you know, whether or not, you know, Taylor Hall is going to be traded, which I think is ridiculous, because
traded for him.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's just so many teams in that Western Conference in both divisions. I mean, the Pacific Division, you know, what is it, 3 points that separate first and fifth, right? So yeah. The Central Division is obviously a little bit more top-heavy.
Look,
but the point is, they're leaving points on the board that are there for the taking.
The you know, the result of last night's contest is exactly what the Jets deserved. They deserve to lose the game because you can't play.
Well, if you're talking about expected goals,
yeah,
or you're talking about high danger chances, then absolutely. The
five
Jets,
on five,
the Jets lost that.
Here's high danger chances. 5-on-5. The San Jose Sharks had 18. Winnipeg Jets had 6. Expected goals last night. San Jose Sharks 2.63. Winnipeg Jets 1.18. This is all at 5-on-5. The vast majority of hockey is played at 5-on-5. And sure, people are going to point to, well, they had such a great pushback at 6-on-5 when the net was empty and they're going to score there more often than not. And yeah, the power play, you know, looked good when they were moving the puck. And yeah, you know, this and yeah, that. But at 5-on-5, to have that kind of effort against the San Jose Sharks is inexcusable on home ice when you're in the midst of a playoff race. With a victory last night, the Jets moved back into a playoff spot. They didn't. They didn't show up. Full mark to the San Jose Sharks, playing without their top two forwards.
And look who also got the goals, right? Like, you're talking about bottom six guys. Like, Melker Carlson's a
nice
player.
For the Sharks, you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Timo Meier is obviously one of their top players. But when you're talking about Marcus Sorensen and Melker, like, it's not like Timo Meier was a dominant player in that game. It's not like, you know, Joe Thornton, well, he's not dominant against anybody anymore.
Yeah.
But there weren't that many players who, like, Evander Kane is having a nice season. Kane, even though, you know, that hit on Neil Pionk was a dirty hit and he's probably going to be suspended, Kane, I think, is at 21 goals now. He's having a nice year. But the reality is, on paper, however you want to say it, Drew, the Jets should have won this game. And at the very least, they should have played better in all areas of the game. I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, Kyle Connor, beautiful goal between the legs. You know, I'm going to watch that goal hundreds of times.
Guess what? It counts for the same amount on the scoreboard.
Doesn't mean anything at this point.
It counts for the same amount on the scoreboard as the Melker Carlson goal and as the Marcus Sorensen goal. So it's 2-1 for the Jets after 40 minutes. And they just stopped skating. They continued to stop skating. That's the part to me where, I mean, I don't want to say that they're arrogant because that's probably too strong. But where does the lack of push come from? How is there not a driver that's saying what we have done thus far at 5-on-5 is not good enough?
Well, and also, you know, we talked about Timo Meier's goal. I mean, that's obviously, you know, a fortuitous bounce that goes right to him.
Sure.
But, I mean, you're loose in the defensive zone. And
Kulikov missed his guy.
Right? So, I mean, that's just kind of lax, you know.
It's attention to
defensive
detail.
Defensive coverage. Sure, whatever you want to call it. But it's also a situation where you know that you don't have the luxury of playing a certain way based on who you have in your lineup. And yes, the Jets have gotten some offense from their third line, but that third line was invisible last night.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, they switched everything up. They moved Wheeler to the wing. They brought Kopp up the middle, pardon me. Either they switched the bottom six. They moved Appleton back down. I mean, they were trying. You heard Paul Maurice postgame. He said, you know, the Sharks set up a neutral zone trap. And it's not difficult. This is what Paul Maurice said, paraphrasing. He said, it's not difficult to beat a neutral zone trap. Send the puck in deep. Go get it. And he said, you know, we refuse to do it. We're trying passes, seam passes that aren't there this time of year. That was his quote. They're trying to be too fancy. The little things that they needed to do in order to win the game, which is throw the puck in deep and go get it. Not well, try to skate through five guys.
It's not even just that. And I realize that, you know, Paul Maurice is kind of breaking it down to that. But it's also, you know, generate some speed. Where was the speed in the Jets game? Like, Kyle Connor was flying last night. Nikolai Ehlers was flying last night. But aside from a couple of guys out there, I mean, the neutral zone was, it was quicksand.
Yeah, but that's how the Sharks want to play it, because that's the only way the Sharks can play it. And so the Jets need to know that they can't fall into the, pardon the pun, trap. The Sharks are playing a trap. The Jets just played right into their hands. And when you play into your opponent's hands, sometimes they get the bounces. And sometimes they get the advantage late in the third period, scoring a couple goals. If the Jets had played a smarter game in terms of how they had to execute on the ice, they would have won that game. Aaron Dell was good. But let's be honest, Aaron Dell is not a Vezina-quality goaltender. The Sharks have one of the worst team save percentages in the entire NHL. And the Jets made it easy on them for the vast majority of the game, which is played at 5-on-5.
You just didn't create enough offense, and I don't think the effort level was there. And I realize that, you know, when you talk about compete and effort level and all of that, it's not something, you know, that that necessarily shows up in advanced stats, but I think it did show up in advanced stats when you talk about...
No question. Look at the high danger chances.
Right.
Look at the scoring chances. I mean, 25 scoring chances to 15 for the Jets. 18 high danger chances to 6 for the Jets.
There's no excuse for not having a shot on goal in an hour of real time. Like, there just isn't an excuse there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just not acceptable when you're in a playoff race.
And that's the problem that the Jets experienced last night. They'll look to try and get back on the scoreboard on the winning side of the ledger. Sunday, a divisional contest against the Chicago Blackhawks. Talk about that throughout the course of the show. When we come back, though, we talk about the Jets' decision to extend Paul Maurice. He's the head coach for at least, well, barring something unforeseen, at least the next 3 years. That's the length of the contract extension. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
On top of that, he's a good person. He's a good man. And I think he treats the players with respect, regardless of how many games you have or, you know, what your seniority is. I think he really tries to treat all the guys, you know, as people first and build a relationship like that. And I think that goes a long way with all the players.
Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler talking to the media yesterday prior to the Jets' loss to the Sharks about Paul Maurice and his contract extension. In case you've been in a cave or under a rock for the last few days, the Jets head coach signing a 3-year contract extension worth reportedly around $3 million per season. That's according to Pierre LeBrun. Jets head coach Paul Maurice is going to stick around for a while longer. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friend, Dr. Les Rikus, and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So the announcement came, I think it was Wednesday, at the Jets Hall of Fame luncheon that Paul Maurice was going to get a 3-year extension. Are you surprised?
No, not at all.
Not at all?
No. I mean, we knew that Paul Maurice, there was a good chance that Paul Maurice was going to sign a contract extension. I might be a little bit surprised that he got 3 years as opposed to two, just because that extra year is pretty significant, right? When you're talking about how long Maurice has been the head coach and you know what he's done with the Jets. They've gotten to the playoffs 3 times. They went all the way to the West Final. They've also been bounced from the first round twice. But even when you go back to 2015, you forget the Jets did pretty well against the Ducks when the Ducks were still a Western Conference superpower. But no, getting back to the Paul Maurice contract extension, you know, how many weeks ago were we talking about it where you started to hear the rumors, you know, Elliot Friedman reported that maybe, you know, Paul Maurice and Ron Francis were talking about maybe, you know, when Maurice's contract is up with the Jets, that maybe he was going to become the first head coach in Seattle's franchise history. And, you know, obviously there was maybe not as much legs to that as we thought. We don't really know.
I think it was leverage. Maybe just, you know, it gets floated out there and it adds to whatever pressure there might be, or just sort of, you know, and I'm not saying that Maurice is the one who said that, but it's just another way of saying, you know, look, I got some options, so it's time to come to the table. I mean, who knows? Yeah.
No, it's a good point, Drew. And, you know, we have no idea how close they got. And by the way, just as an off topic, I mean, now Seattle can pick between Bruce Boudreau, Peter Laviolette. I mean,
Gerard Gallant.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Good options.
You know,
to have
how many good coaches are available right now. And I agree with, you know, the rest of the chorus when we're talking about Bruce Boudreau. I think he's going to be a head coach in the NHL really soon.
But we'll talk about him getting dismissed in
Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm
digressing here. Sorry,
yeah, later on in the show.
No, I mean, look where the Jets are. And like, what I mean is look where they are in the standings, but also look where they are in where they think they are on their road to being a championship team, right? Like Paul Maurice has led that. When Paul Maurice took over for Claude Noel, obviously the team was a pretty big mess. And that playoff appearance in 2015, you know, it was a surprise. I mean, the Jets weren't expecting to go on a long playoff run, you know, back 5 years ago, but the last couple of years, they've had a team that has been built to go on a run. And obviously, that's why you acquire Paul Stastny at the deadline. That's why you acquire a Kevin Hayes. But going back to the contract extension, you know, there are obviously some people that don't think Paul Maurice should have been given a contract extension based on, you know, where the Jets are. Some people think that they're not going to be a playoff team this year, but it's impossible, Drew, to not factor in the turnover that you've had on defense and the injuries. And the fact that the Jets are where they are competing for a playoff spot, it's going to be tough because we talked about it last segment. I mean, Nashville's got three games in hand. Minnesota doesn't want to go away. I mean, Chicago is still in there. I don't think Chicago's making the playoffs, but you've got all those teams in the Pacific that you have to beat, right? Vegas, Calgary, like all Arizona, like all of these teams.
So let me ask you this.
So the point is, the fact I think Paul Maurice has done a very admirable job this year having the Jets in the fight. Now,
are you surprised at the timing? I mean, look, it's
no, I'm not. I'm really not.
February 15th, or the extension happens, I guess, February 13th.
They could have announced this a month ago.
Well, I mean, to me, it's surprising because if you knew that he was your man, why didn't you do this last summer before he was entering his lame duck season? I find the timing to be odd. If you know that Paul Maurice is the right man to lead your team, and that's, you know, the line that they're using, and I have no reason to doubt that they believe that, why not do it before it even becomes the quote unquote lame duck situation? Why not announce the extension last summer so that he has the quote unquote vote of confidence entering this year? I find the timing to be odd. It's almost like they were making him prove himself, but not really, because when the time to prove yourself is, which is now, they just handed him the extension with the team out of a playoff spot.
And it's possible they decided that they didn't want to negotiate. I'm not saying that Paul Maurice didn't want a contract extension, but maybe they decided we're not going to negotiate at the beginning of the season or during the season. And maybe Chevy
but they did, obviously.
No, but what I'm saying is maybe that changed, right? Like, I don't know.
I find the timing odd.
And it's a fair point, Drew. And it's a good, valid question that you bring up. Obviously, I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah, I know.
I can speculate all day long, just like we can with the Dustin Byfuglien situation. But I mean,
I'm just reading the tea leaves in my question.
And the other question I would throw out is, you know, for all of those people that were calling for Paul Maurice to be fired either earlier this season when the Jets were struggling in December and January,
mm-hmm.
right? And then obviously the Jets have turned their season around post player break.
I'd say a little, but go on.
I mean,
they were hurting before the break, right? They've been, you know, prior to these two losses to New York and San Jose, they've been playing better hockey.
Sure.
But finish your point. Go ahead.
Well, the question I was going to ask is which coach was going to be like, was Gerard Gallant an option? Like, was Peter Laviolette an option? Like, I don't know if any of these coaches were an option. I don't even know if Kevin Cheveldayoff was thinking about this. So,
True North, obviously.
I don't think Chevy's thought process has changed really throughout the season. I think that he wanted to extend Maurice at the beginning of the season. As far as why that didn't happen, like you're saying, well, if he's our guy, why not just sign him before this? I agree.
Why not preempt 6 months of talk about a guy who's a coach who's in his last year of his contract?
Well, and I don't know how. I mean, we've talked about it a few times. I don't think it's necessarily been a distraction at all.
Well, fine, but I think it's something that has been sort of hovering over top, not necessarily weighing anything down. But
I think
it's been
with
hovering.
Dustin Byfuglien hovering, I don't think Paul Maurice. If you want to compare hoverings,
no. Byfuglien's was more impactful. There's no question.
So I don't know, Drew. I mean,
I just find the timing to be odd, Ezzy. I mean, that's all I'm saying. And I know that True North and Mark Chipman puts a premium on loyalty and continuity in the front office. Obviously, Kevin Cheveldayoff's been the only general manager of this team. Paul Maurice has now been the second longest tenured head coach in the NHL behind John Cooper.
Yep.
So I think he puts a premium on that. I don't understand the timing. I find the timing to be odd. If you went this far into the final year of the contract, why not play it out? Why not wait until the end of the season? Why not, whether that be making the playoffs or not making the playoffs, if that offer is available, do you think that Paul Maurice doesn't jump on it on April 15th if the team misses the playoffs?
Yeah, and it's possible.
Or May 1st if the team loses in the first round?
I just don't know if it necessarily matters, right? Like, he's the coach, right? Like, what does it matter if he was extended at the beginning of the season versus now? He's going to be the coach for the next 3 years.
There's no question he's going to be the coach for the next 3 years. I just find the timing to be odd. I find the timing to be odd. That's sort of my take on the whole thing. I understand why he got the contract extension. Do I love it? No, because I think Paul Maurice is an average NHL head coach, and I think there was an opportunity, especially with some of the free agents who are now out there in the head coaching ranks, that you maybe could have brought in a new voice. But there's something to be said for Blake Wheeler loving the guy and for continuity between, you know, your captain of your team and your supposed on-ice leader in Wheeler and the head coach and the general manager and up and up and up and up.
What we should be talking about is, do we think that Paul Maurice is going to be the right guy to get them to that next level, which is not winning a round, it's winning the Stanley Cup. Because when you have all of these good young players...
I would have grave questions about his ability to do so.
And that's what we should be talking about, because the timing to me, I mean, they extended him. Like, done.
Right.
It's done. I agree with you. Why didn't they extend him in the summer? I have no idea. Like, someone else might have a better answer than me. Obviously, they decided that they were going to wait. And it could have been in the off season, right? Like, we weren't sure what was going to happen because we didn't even know that it was Paul Maurice's last year.
Until the Heritage Classic in Regina.
So we just found that out, right? Yeah. So obviously, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff was, you know, setting up the public a little bit there, right? By letting everybody know, because as you mentioned, those questions were coming up. But when you look at what Paul Maurice has done, I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit. I mean, Connor Hellebuck's goaltending has saved the Jets on many nights. And you could argue that if Connor Hellebuck was just mediocre this year, the Jets might be a bottom five team in the league.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just based on advanced stats, right?
Yeah.
Like,
based on game flow, based,
you know,
on the success.
We've talked to Sean Tierney many times before. Like, the Jets, when you talk about generating offense and giving up offense, the Jets do not bode well. When you talk about that, I mean, really, Connor Hellebuck has been their MVP, and he has been their MVP for probably 3 years now. But when you're talking about, you know, this team's window with Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, Nikolai Ehlers, Josh Morrissey, Blake Wheeler,
yeah,
I mean,
et cetera. You know the players.
This window is not going to last 5 years. So Paul Maurice has, you know, a couple of years, and you mentioned it's a 3-year contract, but, you know, does he coach this team for those full 3 years? Because I think he's going to have to take this team to at least back to the Western Conference final for him to coach for these full 3 years. I think if the Jets have any bumps in the road over the next couple of years, I mean, you might see a different head coach.
When we come back, Scott Billick joins us for more Winnipeg Jets conversation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us via Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us in studio. If you prefer text messaging, we also accept that form of communication. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And for all your latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, also the Moose. Don't forget about the Moose. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Sun, he covers the Winnipeg Jets. He's a good friend of ours. Scotty Billick joins us on the line. Scotty, how are you, brother?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, Scott. Thanks for joining us bright and early Saturday morning. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets. The hometown team laid a bit of an egg on home ice last night against the San Jose Sharks. You know, people will look at the numbers at the end of the game and they'll say, hey, it was a close game, you know, could have gone either way. You and I both know the truth. Looking at the 5-on-5 performance last night, you know, how can you justify that 5-on-5 performance as anything other than sort of embarrassing for the Jets?
Yeah, I don't really think you can, especially at this time of the year. I mean, especially when your coach comes out after the game and says, you know, the team's looking for seam passes at a time of the year when they're not there, or I think the other quote was, we don't know how to shoot, or you know, something along those lines. I mean, to me, it's like, what's going on? Like, why, this team is full of, you know, shooters, snipers. I mean, there's guys here that can put the puck in the back of the net, and you know, you can see that by goal totals this year, last year, whatever, 2 years ago. But they're not, you know, it seems like everybody wants to make, you know, they're trying to find offense. I don't really know how else to, you know, if you're trying to find the nicest way to say it, it's looking like they're looking for like the perfect goal and it's just not coming. And so, you know, these guys are trying to find the easy tap-ins because they're not able to get a puck through traffic or, you know, a lot of stuff from the perimeter are not really creating a lot of high danger shots, those types of things. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's really no other way to explain it. I mean, last night you're playing a team that has the second worst team save percentage in the league, and you managed to put up three shots in the first period. And yeah, I mean, you can look at the attempts, and I think the Jets even out attempted them in the first period. But I mean, this is the time of year where, you know, you have to take advantage of your chances, and you know, whether or not you put 20 pucks wide in the third period or in the first period or not, it doesn't matter, because you know, at the end of the day, all these chances are adding up to the same thing, and it's no goals, and it's, you know, it's adding up to losses. And this time of year, and you know, the Jets are. You know, I call the Jets a blessed team right now, because nobody else seems to want that final wild card spot. Everybody else is losing too, but you know, eventually these games turn into must win. And even if they're already not must wins at this point, you got 20, you know, maybe 23 games left, 22 games left. You know, how many points realistic do you think the Jets need to get at that point? You know, and it's quite a few, and it's quite a few wins. And you're now losing to some of these teams where you would, you know, the have-not teams or the teams that aren't doing very well in the standings. You're losing to them, and your schedule only becomes harder after, you know, once you get to Washington next week on the road. You know, the easy games, quote unquote easy games, the should wins, you know, just start to fall off, and now you got to beat real teams like Washington or. You know, teams in your own division, even. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you put up duds like that, especially, you know, you had some rest, whatever it is. And yeah, you come out and throw something like that up. It's not good enough at this time of the year.
Scotty, Tucker Poolman returned to the lineup after missing a month. We definitely didn't think that he was going to be out that long. Played about 18 minutes and was paired up with Dmitry Kulikov. Obviously, yeah. You know, he looked a little bit rusty out there, but what did you see high atop the ice surface there in the press box? And do you think there's a good chance that we'll see Sammy Niku tomorrow night versus Chicago?
Well, I mean, you know, you take Sammy Niku out, and you know, I get the reasons. You know, one, because he is playing with an injury, and whether or not Sammy said it's affecting him, I think Maurice gave him that out anyways. But it's also could just be, you know, one of the things. Yeah, I mean, I think you should see him, because at least he gives you some, you know, a bit of a dynamic option on the back end. Bit more of an offensive guy who can kind of find that puck. Yes, not his defensive game isn't perfect by any means, but yeah, it's just not, you know, I looked at last night's defense, and you know, there's a couple times that, well, what's happening? Like, you know, why is Dmitry Kulikov not on his man in front when Melker Karlsson scores? I mean, what's going on? So I think you might see Sammy, maybe not. I think Tucker Poolman's playing regardless. I don't think he's coming out. I mean, yeah, obviously the guy hasn't played in a long time. So you're going to give him another game. I don't think his job's in jeopardy, but, maybe you look at a guy like Lucas Abiza or somebody like that. But again, that's not always the case with this team. oftentimes they do run with the guys you don't think that they should be running with. And so we'll see. We'll see at practice today if Sammy moves back into, you know, one of the top three pairings on the back end.
Scotty, depending on how the next two games go, and they're obviously winnable games, Chicago and LA aren't very good, but depending on how those games go, based on the games against the Sharks and the Rangers, does Kevin Cheveldayoff really have to look at, and he probably already is, but does he really have to look at bringing in a top four defenseman?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, you say LA is a bad team, and then you realize the Jets have lost them twice this year. I mean, it seems like there's no bad teams when the Jets face somebody, right? I mean, all these teams have a chance, and maybe when they shouldn't. So, but yeah, I think by the time those games are over, you know, either it'd be a week and a day until the trade deadline, you get a better idea of, you know, what the Jets should do. Should they bring in top four defense? And I think, you know, if you're a point out of the playoffs, I mean, we've seen teams do crazier things, several points out of the playoffs to try. If you're a point out of the playoffs and you think that a top four defenseman is going to put you over the top, and by that I mean put you into the playoff line, then yeah, I mean, you might as well do it. But at what cost, I guess, is the the question for me. I mean, are you giving up a first rounder just to back, you know, get through the back door on into the playoffs and then see what happens? I guess. I mean, you know, it works for some teams. Some teams can go on large runs and do whatever by getting into eighth place. I mean, you saw Los Angeles Kings win the Stanley Cup out of doing it, but I think, you know, that Los Angeles Kings team was playing a little bit of the rope-a-dope when they did it, because they're a far better team than, you know, being an eighth seed. But yeah, I think it just depends on what is presented to Chevy on that day, or in the days leading up to it, and what cost it's going to cost. If it's going to cost you a prospect in the first rounder for a guy, even a rental, I don't think there's any reason why you would do that at this point, because how far realistically, given what you've seen from this team, are they going in the playoffs if they manage to make it there? And then, you know, if you can find a top four D-man that you want that has term, well, then I think that's a move that you would probably consider more, because it kind of shores up your future a little bit too. So it's just going to depend, you know, win, lose. I mean, if they find the right deal, they'll take it, I think. But yeah, I mean, you can't be losing these next two games, especially to Chicago. But even, you know, even to LA, I mean, you got to beat both of those teams. It's just the way it is. And then you got to beat Ottawa in your first game on the road next week as well. So, and even Buffalo and possibly Philly, right? Like, I mean,
and Washington twice.
I mean, yeah, that's it. You have to win these games. Like, at what point are these must-win games? I mean, it's interesting, because, I mean, right now, again, like I said, I mean, the Jets are in this position where they lose a game and they haven't really lost any standing in the playoff line. I know there's some teams behind them that have some games in hand, but I don't expect those teams to win out either, just based on how those teams have played this year. So who knows? I mean, what happens in Minnesota? I don't know. I mean, do they go on a run? Do they get that new coach bump? And do they, I mean, they're not far behind either, and they were on a streak before they fired Boudreaux yesterday. So do they go on a run because they have, you know, a coaching change, and that puts a fire under the seats in Mini? I have no idea. I mean, there's a lot of variables here, and the Jets are the only one that are kind of the constant. Is this is where the Jets have been, what kind of team they are, and you know, is that the team that they are right now, is that going to get them anywhere? And I don't know. I mean, it's so up and down. They don't go on very many, you know, extended runs. I mean, 3-game winning streaks aren't enough at this time of year. You need to go on a 5 or 6-game winning streak and really, you know, cement yourself into a playoff spot, and they just haven't done that yet.
Scott Billick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Scott covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. Scotty, the news came out Wednesday afternoon at the Hall of Fame luncheon that Paul Maurice was given a contract extension. Turns out to be a 3-year extension worth around $3 million per season. Let me ask you this, you know, why now? Why middle of February, you know, most of the way through a quote-unquote lame duck season? Why did the Jets decide that this is now the time that Paul Maurice deserves to receive a contract extension?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't think they decided now was the time. You know, by all accounts, that was kind of decided in the offseason. And based on the offseason that was in front of Kevin Cheveldayoff, they, I guess, you know, just put it off. I mean, it looks like, from what Chevy said, from what Paul said, I mean, hockey priorities took over at that point. I mean, Chevy had a pretty busy summer last summer. And so, you know, it was just kind of put off. And I don't know, maybe, you know, this is what you do when you have people paying hundreds of dollars for a seat at a dinner table. You give them something big, I guess, at that thing. I have no idea. I mean, it seems like a weird time, like you said, just kind of based on where they are coming off a loss. But at the same time, I guess, you know, some people had the news too. And so at some point it was going to, you know, the dam was going to burst anyways, and somebody was going to report it regardless. So, I have no idea. I mean, it's hard to explain why you would do it at the moment, but, and not do it like, you know, Drew was saying earlier. I mean, why don't you do it then and just not have it being a distraction? But it seems like this wasn't ever a distraction. You'd ask Maurice, or the only distraction that it was, you know, for us in the media wondering what's happening with your head coach, you know, going into the season, throughout the season. Even when we talked to Chevy in his sit down in Denver, talking to him about it there. It never seemed to be a huge priority, and it seemed like that was because it was already done, and you just kind of pick the time that you want to pick to you know, put it out there, and they did it at their nice little fancy little luncheon. So, yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that I can think of, really, of why you would do it now and, give the fans something at that lunch and make the day and the Hall of Fame thing all that much, better for everybody involved, I guess. But, yeah, that's just the way it goes sometimes, I suppose.
Scotty, we talked about the defense earlier and whether or not Sammy Niku might be back in the lineup tomorrow night versus Chicago. When you look at the forwards, yeah. I mean, Jack Roslovic started the game back up on the second line, and obviously the Jansen Harkins, Andrew Kopp, Mason Appleton line, they were so good last weekend versus Ottawa and Chicago, and they haven't necessarily done as well the last couple of games. Are you expecting Paul Maurice to start the game with his line blender, or do you expect him to keep Jack Roslovic up on that second line? Maybe he goes with Mason Appleton. Like, what kind of line combination changes do you expect to see from Paul Maurice? Because, obviously, the bottom six has gone a little bit cold the last couple of games.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting yesterday is having Andrew Kopp at center and Blake Wheeler back out on the wing. I thought that was probably the most interesting combination to this. Yeah, I think if you're trying to get the most out of your scoring, maybe putting Wheeler back to the wing is the right thing to do, and see what happens from that. But, that was just an in-game change that happened, and, the Jets were chasing the game, and this team's looking for offense, and they can't find it. So, I guess we'll see today. I mean, I think there is an argument that you could make for changing something up. I mean, even if you want to talk about the top line, I don't think that one's getting touched. But I mean, if you look at Mark Scheifele's game as of late, I mean, are you pretty confident that he doesn't need a bit of a kind of a kick in the pants type thing to get himself going? And I understand that yesterday, he was sick. I mean, he's been sick for the last couple of days, but. Mm-hmm. This isn't a past couple of days trend.
It's scoreless since
like this.
No goals since the player break. One goal in his last 12 games.
Correct. Exactly. Right. And this is a guy that you are counting on, given where he is on the lineup, to score, to produce. And he's just not at the moment. In that sense, in the scoring sense, and really right now, that's what the Jets need. They just need goal scorers, not people. Whatever. And so people talk about his back checking and all that. And maybe you need to, I don't know, do you put Andrew Kopp on the top line? It sounds crazy, but I mean, maybe you need to shake some things up there. So you might see a few little changes today. Maybe not. I mean, I think Andrew Kopp at center is what they want. But the thing is, when you move Andrew Kopp from the third, quote unquote, third line or whatever to the second line, then you're really, you're starting to starve out your bottom six even more than it already is at this point. So, at the end of the day, the Jets need to find some scoring. Kyle Connor's not going to pull the puck through his legs every night and put it in the back of the net. I mean, you need to find some goals 5-on-5. You need to, find ways to win hockey games. So, yeah, I don't have an answer for you, and I won't until noon or, just shortly after it today, but I think if you're looking for it, this would be a good time based on a couple losses now that you could start looking at your lines and seeing if there's a better way to kind of optimize them at this point.
The Jets will look for redemption tomorrow night. Note the start time, 7:30 p.m. tomorrow night start time against the Blackhawks. So you could make sure you got the coffee ingested there, Scotty. It might be a late night for you, buddy.
Yeah, old deadlines never get easier. So.
Well, at least it's not an 8 o'clock start, right? You got that. Fair enough. You can hang your hat on that. Thank you, buddy.
Anytime.
We'll see you tomorrow night. Scott Bilk of the Winnipeg Sun joining us on the program. When we come back, Scott alluded to it, the recent struggles of Mark Scheifele are becoming more and more noticeable. He's gone 8 games without a goal, 1 goal in his last 12. We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Although they did get delayed last night. Bouncing puck to the front of the net, score! Mark Scheifele will get the Jets on the board, and with 1:43 left to go, this is a one-goal game. It's 2-1 Chicago.
Dennis Bayak with the call. That was the last time, if you're not counting the All-Star game, and we're not, that Mark Scheifele scored a goal. Back on January the 19th, the Jets' number one center, certainly in a slump. Zero goals, as I mentioned in our interview with Scott Billick last segment. Zero goals in his last eight games. One goal in his past 12. How did the Jets get Mark Scheifele back rolling there, Ezzy? Do you think it's time? We talked about it with Scott, you know, to maybe juggle that top six. Connor and Laine still been producing. They have 11 goals and 18 points in the last 12 games. So they've still been producing. It's Scheifele who's been held off the scoreboard in terms of putting the puck in the back of the net.
Yeah, Scheifele's got 5 assists in his last 7 games, but you're talking about the goal scoring, right? And as far as I'm concerned,
His performance on the ice hasn't been great.
Well, if he's been dealing with, a flu or an illness the last couple of games, that's one thing. You're not going to use it as an excuse, but you have to give him a little bit of a pass if he's been dealing with that. But that's just a couple of games here.
Well, that's we wouldn't be having this segment if it was 2 games of struggles.
Yeah, we're talking about 7-8 games, right? So we're talking about one of the best offensive players, if not the best offensive player on the team. Now, when you talk about breaking up the top line, no, I don't think they should, because how long did it take them to find this line that is so productive, right? Like, and as you mentioned, Patrick Laine is arguably playing the best hockey of his career. Maybe not so much last night against the Sharks, but aside from Kyle Connor, who was really good on the Jets last night, right?
Nobody.
Not too many guys. So when you're talking about Connor and Laine, they're flying out there. And, Scheifele's still a point of game player. Obviously, he's cooled down a little bit.
Over the course of the season, he's a point of game player. Yeah.
Yeah. And, he had 7 shots on net yesterday. And the one thing that, I noticed a little bit coming out of the break, even the games, against St. Louis and Nashville, maybe he's shooting the puck a little bit less. But, Scheifele's still doing his job. He's still getting those dangerous looks on the power play. Has he looked like the same dominant player? Has he struggled a little bit sometimes on the back check or in the defensive zone? Sure. But if you want my real answer, I'm not concerned overall at a macro level about Scheifele's game. Like, to me, he's a top 20 center in the NHL, maybe even top 10. Like, he's an elite player.
So you think you just let him play through these struggles?
I think it's
status
it's
quo,
a slump.
And he's going to
really
figure it out.
I really do think it's a slump, Drew. And but there's no doubt that he isn't performing at that same offensive clip. Like, you expect Mark Scheifele to basically be on the score sheet every single night. Whether that's a goal or an assist, you expect him, because he's on the top power play, because he's the first line center, you just expect that. He's a point a game player now. And he was on pace, I think, for 95 points at one point, right?
Yeah.
But obviously, he hasn't been putting up the points the last couple of games. Thought he was really good against Chicago. We talked about it. Scheifele, Connor, and Laine. I mean, night in, night out, guys, this has been the team's best line. And obviously, when you talk about Wheeler and Ehlers, they've been really good. But, you've kind of seen the line struggle a little bit. And it was clicking with Mason Appleton. And now Jack Roslovic is back on that line. Roslovic didn't have a very good game yesterday. Like, the second line is still a work in progress when you talk about finding that other winger, right? So I don't think you start moving around anybody right now. Scheifele is your first line center. And let's be honest, I mean, your second line center isn't really a center. And Scott Billick talked about it last segment. Like, you've got Andrew Kopp, who obviously has had an unbelievable season, right? And you have the ability to move him to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I think that would be something that is more logical for Paul Maurice. Like,
so tomorrow
the points are going to come for Scheifele. Like, I think that this has just been a bad stretch, even though his line has played well. I just don't think he's getting the results.
So tomorrow, to your point about the centerman and Andrew Kopp, and we saw that yesterday during the course of the game when Paul Maurice is looking for some energy somewhere from a team that looked like they were skating in quicksand, as you said at the start of the show.
It was a flat team. And I understand that if there's a flu bug going through the room and there's, a virus, whatever, I mean, that would explain a lot, because they didn't have jump. Like, on a Friday night in front of your home crowd against a bottom feeder in the West. Like, I realize San Jose went to the West final last year, but that's not a good team.
No, it's a different
team.
Like,
I was telling you off air, Drew, take Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns off of that blue line, and it might be one of the worst teams in the league.
Especially without Hurdle and without Logan Couture in their lineup. I mean, we've talked about it a lot this hour. It was a pretty inexcusable performance by the Jets last night. And you can say, you guys are being too harsh, or there's a virus, and maybe. But teams always play with, there's always
just as long as it's not malaise.
no, don't want that malaise to come back again. That malaise was a real problem for a little while there. The point is, it was a pretty poor performance last night. The Jets need to turn the page, and they need to do it quickly, because opportunity strikes again, and that opportunity is a divisional game tomorrow night against the Chicago Blackhawks.
Right, and then you play two terrible teams in L.A. and Ottawa, so there's no excuses for not winning these three games. Like, you should win these three games, mm-hmm. and not only should you win those three games, you should win them handily.
Because you've used up your buffer. You know, you said at the start of the homestand or the start of the stretch, maybe you can lose one game, maybe you can lose two games. Well, you've lost the two games now. You can't lose anymore. You now need to go on this run. The next five games, all this week. You have Chicago at home tomorrow. You have LA on Tuesday, Ottawa on Thursday, Philly on Saturday, Buffalo on Sunday. You got to win five of those games, or you got to go 4-0-1 in those five to start feeling better about yourself and start putting yourself back in a playoff position. When we come back, we talk about tomorrow's opponent, the Chicago Blackhawks. Ben Pope covers the team for the Chicago Sun-Times. He joins us from Calgary, where the Blackhawks face the Flames tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Saturday morning, you're listening to this fine radio station, this fine radio program. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my good friend, Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Looking to get a hold of Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times to join us to talk about the Blackhawks. They're in town for the second time in the course of 7 days. Obviously, tomorrow's game is a must-win. It's a must-win based on the fact that it's a divisional game. It's a must-win based on the fact that Jets have lost two in a row. And it's a must-win based on the facts of where they are in the standings. It's also a must-win because you're going to have a Blackhawks team that is playing tonight in Calgary.
Yep.
Then they have to
travel. Ben is in Calgary.
Ben is in Calgary. Yep. So yep. The Blackhawks play tonight in Calgary, and that's why the game tomorrow is at 7:30. It's later start time because the Blackhawks play tonight in Calgary, travel here, have the quick turnaround. I mean, this is a Blackhawks team that is going to be tired. It's a Blackhawks team that is going to be not at full strength, not at full speed, entering tomorrow night's contest against the Jets. And they have to jump on them and take advantage of a weakened opponent, something they really haven't been able to do thus far in the last little while.
Yeah, it's a tough stretch for the Blackhawks, right? Like, you're facing a Flames team who's obviously desperate for points.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned tired. Maybe it was because of that really long Sedin ceremony, obviously, that the Blackhawks were part of. No, obviously, I'm joking.
Yeah.
You know, that was a great ceremony. I mean, Daniel and Henrik, I think they're future Hall of Famers, maybe even first ballot. But, you know, this Blackhawks team, I think, has exceeded most people's expectations. And, you know, we saw the Jets handle the Hawks pretty easily, but last weekend.
Well, I don't think it was a 2-0 Chicago game. The Jets, remember, you know, Blake Wheeler scores that goal with about 10 minutes to go in the game where he goes over the shoulder of Crawford short side. And if that doesn't happen, you know, it's still, the Jets are still trailing. Andrew Kopp gets the late goal. You know, if that doesn't happen.
The third period was pretty one-sided.
Fine, but again, it took the Jets 40 minutes to get to that stage of desperation to get back into the game. You have to jump on the Blackhawks tomorrow early, especially if they're going to come off that plane, you know, late tomorrow morning, to be more accurate, after midnight. You have to jump on your opponent quickly. I mean, the Blackhawks are not really in the race. I mean, I would say they're not in the race. They're 6 points behind the Coyotes.
They're not out of the race.
They're not completely out of it, but they could be. If the Jets win tomorrow, I think that's the final, quote-unquote, nail in the coffin.
I don't think Chicago's making the playoffs.
I don't think
so
they are
either. I wouldn't say that they're out of it because I think we've counted the Hawks out of it many times before, and they've stuck around even though they've been 500 for a little bit.
I think tomorrow, our Jets victory tomorrow.
Sure, sure. I'm not going to argue with you.
Concludes their chances, concludes any hope that the Blackhawks have. Now, if the Blackhawks pull it off, oh, wait a minute, they're now only maybe 4 points behind the Coyotes for the final Western Conference playoff spot there. So, I mean, I think tomorrow's game for the Jets is massive. They need to get good feelings going. They need to get good feelings going after the last two defeats.
They need points, Drew.
Yeah.
I mean, they need the points like we talked about. They not only do they have to beat Chicago and they have to beat Ottawa, you got to beat Buffalo, and they have to go on a run here, 4 or 5 wins in a row if they really want to start feeling good.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Chicago Sun-Times, we're pleased to be joined by Ben Pope. Ben joins us from Calgary, where the Blackhawks will do battle with the Flames later on tonight before heading over to Winnipeg tomorrow. Ben, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Our pleasure, Ben. Obviously, the Blackhawks come to Winnipeg tomorrow night for the second time in 7 days. They had the hard-fought defeat last Sunday. You look at this Blackhawks road trip right now. They lost in Vancouver in the Sedin night on Wednesday night. They play back-to-back tonight and tomorrow night. Are these next two games almost the defining period of the Blackhawks if they want to get back into a legitimate playoff contention in the West?
Well, considering that the time's running out and they've lost 5 in a row, they definitely need to turn it around soon, and these two games against bubble teams would be a good time to do so. As you guys saw in Winnipeg last Sunday, I mean, they played well for a lot of that game, but just sort of faltered down the stretch, and that's been the story pretty much throughout this road trip so far. The same thing in Edmonton the couple of days after, and then same thing in Vancouver, where they really dominated the game and outshot the Canucks 49-20 and came up with a 3-0 loss. So the optimism is still there in the room, and honestly was a lot more upbeat than I expected it would be after that Vancouver loss being their 5th in the row. But they're definitely running out of time, and they need to get results pretty soon.
You know, Ben, you know, we're talking about, you know, the Hawks and how desperate they are for these points. You know, we talked about it right before we had you on. The Hawks are 6 points out of a wild card spot right now. But whether or not the Hawks make the playoffs this year, has this been a successful season? Because I think you would agree, at the beginning of the season, the expectations were not high. Nobody was picking the Hawks to win the Central or even finish second or third in the Central. And when you consider that the majority of the team is going to be back next year, there's not too many, you know, pending UFAs. I mean, obviously the goaltending is a question mark, you know, whether or not the Hawks are going to be able to retain Leonard. But has this season almost been a success, even if they don't get in?
I mean, I would not think so at all. I mean, they've missed the playoffs 2 years in a row entering this season after the stretch of three cups and everything. And there was definitely optimism, maybe not around the league and other cities, but there was definitely optimism in Chicago for this year. And the team believed that while they hadn't done any huge summer additions, they had made a lot, probably were one of the most active teams in the league, and had retooled the defense and obviously brought in Leonard and had Kirby Dach debuting. And I think they definitely expected the playoffs this year for themselves, even if others didn't. And this is definitely going to be a disappointment if they don't. And it's going to raise questions about sort of how to shape the future trajectory of the team, considering now 3 playoff misses in a row, and the core is certainly getting older, and you have guys like Seabrook where now they have major injury concerns, and as you said, the goaltending is a big question. Crawford's a free agent, and so is Leonard, and so I think it's, if they miss the playoffs this year, which it certainly looks like they're going to, it's going to make some tough questions for the front office, and we might see some firings, we'll see, and it's going to be tough for the franchise to sort of model itself after this. So, no, I would not say it would be a success.
Ben Pope is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ben covers the Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times. And Ben, you mentioned Duncan Keith as one of the veteran guys on the Blackhawks roster, and they're used to winning. We know that, you know, all the success they had, all the Stanley Cups they've had. How is Duncan Keith? We know Seabrook's sort of away from the team. He's out of the lineup for the foreseeable future after having the double surgeries. How is a guy like Duncan Keith handling all the adversity that they're experiencing, all the losing that they're probably not used to?
Well, talking to him in Vancouver, he hasn't made a lot of media appearances this year, but we talked to him there, and It seemed like he's taken on more of a mentor role this year than in the past. He's been mainly paired with Adam Boqvist, who's 19-year-old rookie, basically half his age, and he's taken a more of a defensive, conservative role and also more of a mentoring role of Boqvist and the rest of the defense, which is pretty young and a little penetrable, I would say. But the losses certainly weigh on him, and it's not like he wants out or anything. He's still very committed to the future, but he's certainly getting up there in years. He'll turn 37 this summer, and it's certainly been tough for him to adjust to this new state for the team, but he has made that adjustment and is working more with the young guys, and instead of being sort of the upfront face of the franchise leader that he was along with Kane and Taves in prior years.
Ben, you know, you talk about some of these younger players on the team, and a guy to me that maybe hasn't worked out maybe as well as you'd like is Alex Nylander, and that trade I know was criticized quite a bit at the time. Henry Jokiharju, a very promising young defenseman who had a really nice year for the Blackhawks. Aside from the offensive numbers, I mean, how would you assess Alex Nylander's time? I know he scored a nice goal earlier this season against the Jets, but would you say his season's been disappointing or is it kind of mixed?
Yeah, no, it's been disappointing for sure. I mean, there was a lot of criticism about that trade, as you said, but there was some hope that maybe Nylander could turn it around in a fresh environment, much like Dylan Strome did in a kind of similar trade a year before. But he really hasn't. I mean, it hasn't been a total disaster. He has been in the NHL all season, unlike in Buffalo, and he's contributed a little bit here and there. And one thing that the statistics show he's actually quite good at is entering the offensive zone with the puck, and he's a good skater, so he has some puck-carrying ability and some playmaking, but, I mean, he's been on the fourth line for months now and not doing a lot. Certainly, well, you look at Jokiharju, and he's established himself as a top-four guy at a young age in a struggling team in Buffalo. Nylander has come in and not made nearly the same impact here in Chicago, and he tends to sort of shy away from pressure and doesn't really drive the net. There have been a number of situations where you'll see he has maybe a promising chance. It's a two-on-two rush or something, and he just sort of curls away and passes it back or something. And he just doesn't seem to have the confidence and maybe even the motivation right now. And so I wouldn't say it's been a disaster, but it's definitely been a disappointment.
Ben Pope is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ben covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times, the Hawks, and the Jets tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. Note the start time, little later than normal, 7:30 p.m. start time, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Ben, you touched on it in an earlier answer. Both Corey Crawford and Robin Lehner are unrestricted free agents at season's end. Why shouldn't the Blackhawks make a long-term commitment to Lehner?
I think myself and a lot of the fans and other reporters definitely think that that's probably the way to go here. I mean, he's been one of the best goalies in the league in terms of the quality of chances he faces, and he's a very refreshing environment in the locker room and on the ice. And while he's definitely an unusual person, it's fitted with the team, and it seems to add some energy to the group. And so I think all around, he's been a fantastic addition, and I'd hate to think where the team would be in the standings if not for him this season. It's just going to come down to the salary cap. It's going to be a tough situation when DeHaan and Seabrook's contracts come back on the books this summer, and Dylan Strome's an RFA, and we'll probably get, I don't know, in the $5 million range or so. So they're going to have to fit that in, and a new extension that they signed last summer for DeBrincat that goes up to $6 million for him kicks in. And it's going to be a squeeze for sure, and there are already guys like Erik Gustafsson and Drake Caggiula that could be casualties of that. And Lehner certainly is a bigger priority than Caggiula or Gustafsson, so if they really want to fit him in, I'm sure they'll find a way. But that's really the main roadblock here, and he's going to want a long-term contract himself. He's tired of what he feels is being disrespected by teams, and the one-year deal over the summer that he got, he seemed kind of frustrated that was the best offer he had on the table. So it's going to be a very interesting negotiations so far. I know they're already underway, and I'm sure they're going to dial up even more, but we do have the trade deadline in the meantime to look at, because his name has been out there a little bit.
Do you think there's any chance that he does get dealt at the deadline?
Yeah, there's certainly a chance. It's hard to say how much of a chance, but I think for both he and Crawford that there's a chance. Gustafson, as I was mentioning, is definitely the most likely, but behind them, they're probably the two guys most interesting to look at as far as a deal. I wouldn't say it's likely, and I think the team would prefer to commit to him long term, but we'll see how it shapes out. I'm not sure that the dedication to do so is quite as high internally as the external factors suggest it would be.
You mentioned the salary cap struggles, Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times joining us, or the salary cap difficulties that the Blackhawks have. You know, how would you assess the job Stan Bowman has done as of late, I guess, in terms of, as a role and as his role in the general manager? We mentioned the trade for Nylander hasn't worked out very well. There's some contracts on the books that you might not love. How would you assess his job as of late?
I think he's done a decent job lately. He's being hurt by decisions that might not have been the best that he made a few years ago. That trade wasn't so good, but a lot of the summer additions have worked out pretty well. The Leonard one, as we talked about, even guys like Ryan Carpenter and Olimata and DeHaan, even though he's been hurt, a lot of those guys have made solid impacts. It's been more the core guys, some of them not producing as much, like DeBrinket and also just some breakdowns across the board, but this year hasn't been that bad from my perspective. I think he's done a decent job. He's just in a tough situation because of the long-term deals that he has signed before that remain on the books, and it's kind of tough to shape the team and maybe prepare it well for the future, especially when guys like Doc and Boquist in a few years come up for new contracts, when you have this aging into their mid-30s core that's still tied up with a lot of money.
Ben, you just mentioned Adam Boquist, and that leads nicely into my next question about him. First-round pick a couple of years ago. You know, what have you seen from him? Obviously, it's tough to enter the league as a 19-year-old defenseman, and the Chicago Blackhawks have shown in recent memory that they're not afraid to put a young defenseman into the lineup. Just what have you seen out of his game? He's obviously got a bright future ahead of him.
It's been very impressive to see how quickly he's adjusted to the NHL. I mean, at the start of the season, he was sent to Rockford, the AHL affiliate, and the message was that he just needed to work on his defensive game more, and I think that was certainly evident, too, in terms of in Traverse City, the prospects tournament, and then in training camp. He wasn't NHL-ready defensively, even though he's a great puck-moving defenseman, and then he was called up in, I think, late November, so just a month and a half down there, and there were some questions that maybe they rushed him and that it was a bit abrupt because the team was struggling so much they wanted to just get him in immediately, and yet he really has held his own completely. He hasn't had really any major gaffes, and he hasn't struggled defensively at all, and that's been a credit to him, and also because he's been maybe limiting his natural offensive instincts a little bit to play more conservative this year. And I think in time, once the defense gets a little bit more certain for him, he'll open himself up and go attack more. And that'll be exciting to see because that's the strongest part of his skill set, and we haven't seen it a whole lot. But he's been on the first pair with Keith, as I mentioned, and he's really held his own. He's probably been more of a success than Doc this year, and Doc's been a success too. So those two guys do provide a lot of optimism for the future.
Last question for you, Ben. Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Alex DeBrinket was a 40-goal scorer last year. This year he's going to be fighting tooth and nail just to get to half that mark, 20 goals. What's gone wrong, if you want to use that terminology, for DeBrinket's season so far?
Well, I think a lot of it is honestly luck. Last year he was at 18.6% shooting percentage, which is just completely unsustainable. Mm-hmm. And he's admitted that he had a lot of bad goals, a lot of fluky goals last season. And this year it's been the opposite. He's down around 8%. And as a talented shooter that he is, that produces the scoring chances that he does, that's also unsustainably low. And it's certainly weighed on him mentally, and the past few games we've seen the effects of that. He's struggled a lot lately, especially. I think earlier in the winter and in this season, he was playing fine despite the lack of production. But the past few games, he's had some costly turnovers and some rough moments, and hasn't shown the normal DeBrincat stuff that he shows. And that's certainly angered a lot of people and caused some frustration that's built up over the whole year to boil over. And I think it'll even out for him eventually, and he's still, in the long run, producing the chances that he normally does. It's just been an even strength, really. The power play production is the same as last year, but although the power play is another story in terms of the overall success. But an even strength is really where his production is just not there, and I think it'll come in time. But it's certainly a trying moment for him as a third year player, and probably the first real adversity he's had to face in his career. So I think the hope is that in the long run he'll come out of it a better player.
Ben Pope covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times. The Blackhawks are in Calgary tonight before they make the late-night journey to Winnipeg to face the Jets tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. Ben, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Ben. Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times joining us from Calgary. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Blackhawks, a look at the Western Conference standings, much more to come. If it's Saturday morning, you know that it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Into the corner it goes. Roslovic in front for Kopp. Scores! Andrew Kopp, and Corey Crawford is furious.
That was last Sunday, the game-winning goal for the Winnipeg Jets, defeating the Blackhawks, coming back from that two-goal deficit to win 3-2. You thought maybe the Jets were going to start going on a roll at that point in time. Well, we know what happened after that. Losers of the last two contests, the Jets look to get back in the win column tomorrow night against the Blackhawks, a divisional game, as we mentioned earlier. You know, as the Jets, that goal last week was against Corey Crawford. And we remember earlier this season how good Robin Lehner was against the Winnipeg Jets. We don't yet know who the Jets are going to face tomorrow. I would have to assume you'd go Crawford tonight in Calgary and then use your better of your two goaltenders, that being Lehner, tomorrow night against your divisional rival.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
That makes logical sense. Yeah. We don't yet know the answer to that.
You're not going
to
see the same goalie back-to-back, that's for sure.
No, certainly not. Look, and we asked Ben Pope about it when he joined us last segment. Robin Lehner has been very good for the Blackhawks this year. We know how good he was last year for the Islanders, and they chose not to make a long-term commitment to him, choosing to commit to Semyon Varlamov instead, which is a decision I still found curious. Robin Lehner, I mean, I don't understand what else people want to see from him. He's been one of the best goaltenders in the league for the past two seasons. If you're the Blackhawks, you have no goaltenders on your roster for next year aside from Colin Delia. And you're not going to, you know, he's not going to be your number one next year. I don't know what it's going to take to make a long-term commitment to Lehner, but if he goes to free agency, somebody's going to jump on him.
Yeah, and, you know, when you go back to last summer, right, and I remember talking about this on this show, right, like we were talking about, like, why don't the Islanders just give him his money, right?
Yeah.
Like he's a Vezina finalist, you know. Excellent goalie. I remember, you know, going a few years back talking to Marty Biron, good friend of the show, about Lehner, and obviously the Sabres, you know, have been a pretty big mess, but Lehner was still, you know, an excellent goaltender, and you could see the upside. And you forget that Lehner, you know, I think people, you know, think he's much older. What is he, 29?
Yeah, 28. 30, he's turning 29.
29 years old, right? 28, 29 years old. So, like, a team that needs a starting goaltender is going to sign him to 3, 4, maybe even 5 years. And I think he deserves it, right? And we know everything he's gone through with addiction and mental health. And he's become one of my favorite goalies in the league almost for that reason alone, but also how he's persevered through his personal struggles and also his on-ice struggles, right? Like,
sure.
Buffalo was a mess. He wasn't playing really well. You remember
Ottawa
him and Linus Allmark and, like, so, and Ottawa as well. Yeah, you're right, Drew. Like,
until he
got
his life in order, and full kudos for him to do so, look what's happened to his goaltending. He's become one of the best goaltenders in the league.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was telling you off air after Ben Pope was on, I was saying, like, why are you not extending him right now? Like, Corey Crawford has had an excellent career. Like, he's got the Stanley Cup rings, and he's played well this year.
Yes.
And it's nice to see that he's been healthy, because the last few years he's had all sorts of problems with his health, right? In and out of the lineup. So I understand that there's a loyalty to a little bit to Corey Crawford, but at most, what are you giving Crawford, a one-year deal?
That's, I would give, like, yeah. If you like want to go back with your...
Maybe two, but you're not signing Corey Crawford to a three-year deal at this point in his career.
If you can figure out a way, I mean, both of them combined are making $11 million this year, which is obviously way too much. If you can figure out a way to...
It's not bad, actually, when you... I think Leonard's underpaid.
Oh, there's no question he's underpaid at $5 million.
To me, if Sergei Bobrovsky's making $10
million... Well, he's been a tire fire for the Panthers this year.
Is Leonard not a $7 million goalie?
He's certainly playing as one of the upper echelon goaltenders in the league. So next year, if you're the Blackhawks and you want to make a $6.5 million a year commitment to Leonard for the next 3, 4, 5 years, I would have no problem with that contract based on his performance. Last year, you'd say, yeah, he was on an Islanders team that was very good defensively, and we want to see him prove it again. Well, he's proven it on a pretty lousy Blackhawks team.
Well, you know what? I mean, it goes back to my question. And obviously, you know, the reason why I asked Ben Pope that question is because, like, to me, this has been a successful season to a certain degree for the Blackhawks because, you know, it's not just about our expectations for them. But when you compare the Hawks to the St. Louis Blues, the Colorado Avalanche, the Dallas Stars, like the better teams in the Central, I mean, they're not there. Like the Hawks, to me, there are some similarities between the Hawks and the Jets when you look at, you know, the top heavy, top two lines, excellent goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a mixture of young and old on defense, right? Like Adam Boqvist, to me, is a stud. Like, he looks like a good young defenseman. Like, he's going to be a good defenseman for a lot of years.
First round pick. Right? You know, he's your bridge to the future.
Yeah, and when you look at, you know, Duncan Keith is having a good year. I mean, Duncan Keith is not the Duncan Keith from 5 years ago, but he will tell you that.
36 years old or something.
But he's a guy that I think has provided them with useful minutes. Obviously, Brent Seabrook and Calvin DeHaan, losing those guys is big, even though Seabrook was a guy that was in and out of the lineup.
He was overpaid, but that's, I mean, he was still...
That contract was from 3 years ago, though, right?
It was a bad contract.
Right, so when you're talking about DeHaan, I mean, they could easily use DeHaan, but the point is... I think Chicago, just the fact that they've stayed in the fight, the Jets like to use that sentence, but they really have stayed in the fight. Like, to me, the Chicago Blackhawks and the Minnesota Wild, if they make the playoffs, that is totally unexpected from most people based on how good the Central is. And why I think that's important and means that it's been a success is I think you can build on that for next year. Like, what I mean, Drew, is like if the Blackhawks were out of the playoffs and they were, let's say, 15 points out of it, it's like, what are you building on? Are you just building on the last 20 games of the year? Like, to me, the Blackhawks have been in a playoff race for the majority of the season. Like, they haven't had, like, an up-and-down season like the Blues where they were last place and they crawled up to first. Like, they've been consistently just a little bit outside of the playoff
within
line.
Within shouting distance.
Right. And how can you expect more when... You don't really have much scoring depth. Like, after Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Alex DeBrincat.
And DeBrincat's, you know, having a bad year.
Well, and certainly, I mean, I don't know if you can expect him to have...
He's not having as good a year as he had last year.
Sure, but, and that's even, you know, further, you know, adds to my point that they don't have that much scoring. Like, they don't have four good scoring lines like a team like St. Louis or Washington does, right?
They don't have Zach Sanford who's scoring four goals against the Golden Knights a couple nights ago.
So, I mean, what did people expect? Like, I don't know anybody that expected the Blackhawks to be a top team in the Central. So the fact that they've actually had a, like, the Blackhawks are not an easy team to play against. Jeremy Colleton, I think, has done a nice job keeping this team competitive because they've had to change their playing style. I mean, when they were winning the Stanley Cups, they don't have the horses that they used to. So they've got to grind out and win games 3-2, whatever, right? So, you know, to me, they've had an admirable season. And, you know, the fact that they've, again, like I said, stuck around this long is impressive.
When we come back, we discuss the Jets' defense entering into tomorrow night's contest against the Blackhawks. For the first time, they're fully healthy. Maybe Nikku a little banged up. We'll talk about the defense, what we think the pairings are going to be, who we think is going to be in the lineup entering tomorrow night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on TSN Radio 1290.